It's Wednesday, September 5th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The Bentonville Farmers Market is open 7 a.m. until 1 p.m. each Saturday morning and 10 to 2 on Wednesdays. Located in Lawrence Plaza, just north of the downtown square, this market offers fresh produce, meats, cheeses, breads, and coffees, as well as handmade crafts, cooking demonstrations, and live music. More information available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254.
The KUAF website giveaway and Walton Arts Center are offering you the chance to win two tickets to the 10x10 art series. Productions include Plena Libre, LA Theater Works, Circa, and more. The drawing is Friday, September 4th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information are available at KUAF.com.
Just ahead on Ozarks, a big money announcement this morning on the University of Arkansas campus. Then later, all the work behind the scenes to make sure drinking water is safe in Fort Smith. And a brief post-performance conversation with cast and crew of the manic and hilarious Noises Off. It was recorded after the past Sunday matinee.
But first, a section of recreational trail in Fayetteville that was damaged by heavy rains in the spring of 2011 is now repaired and open for use. Over the past weekend, the city finished repairs and reopened a portion of Frisco Trail just west of the Fayetteville Public Library and the KUAF studios. The floods that came in April and May of last year washed away the hillside and half of the trail surface in the affected area. As a result, Matt Mihalovich, City Trails Coordinator, says much thought went into designing the repair.
So what we had to do is kind of start from the bottom, back from the creek edge, and work our way back up. And what we used are what are called gabion baskets. It's a way of erosion control. But to make them look nicer, we use native stone within those baskets to increase the aesthetic of the area. So those are at the bottom. That's a gabion wall at the bottom. And then it works its way up to a new block wall that matches what was there before, but a little bit deeper. And then we're able to replace the trail on top of that wall.
Mihalovich says the gabion baskets offer multiple forms of erosion control to help prevent the same type of damage from reoccurring.
They'll hold the hillside. They've been designed and engineered to withstand the force of the hillside above it. And also they're an armor so that the creek can't wash them out or erode them, causing the undermining of the hillside. So that's prevented. They also allow water to flow through so that they don't hold back the hydraulic pressure of the hillside. It's able to be freely coming through.
Because the floods that caused the damage were declared a natural disaster, 75% of the repair cost was covered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The state covered 12.5%, and the city picked up the remaining 12.5% of the cost. Mihalovich says the city's trails crew is also working on paving a segment of trail south of Lake Fayetteville. Once completed, paved trails will encircle the entirety of the lake and connect to trails at Veterans Park.
Sebastian County residents can expect to see ongoing improvements at Ben Garin Regional Park. The county currently has 9 projects underway there, including construction of a combination safe room and community center, rehabilitation of the park's 6 tennis courts, doubling of the size of the park's disc golf course, and adding more fields to the park's soccer facilities. Other projects include construction of wildlife observation trail system, expansion and renovation of the park's softball facilities, and the construction of an $8 million aquatics facility. Sebastian County Judge David Hudson says that since the park was constructed in 1972, the county has worked to keep the park up to date by adding more lighting and repairing fencing around the sports fields, and by upgrading restroom facilities to newer standards.
The park offers a wide variety of opportunities for the citizens in this area. So we'll continue to do the updating and improvements and expansions. Most of this has been done with county money. We have also received several grants that have helped us. And then, of course, the interlocal agreement with the city of Fort Smith concerning the 2 softball fields and the aquatics facility, where we're going to share that on a 50-50 basis.
With these expansions and upgrades, Hudson says the funding for construction projects comes from a few different sources.
This year, there was another $550,000, and that's been supplemented by grant money of at least that much. And if you go back over the last 5 years, you can probably add another $700,000 to $800,000 of expenses, including some other grants that we got. And so it's in that range.
Hudson says costs for the future projects at the park include $4 million each by both county and the city of Fort Smith for construction of the Aquatic Center and $1.2 million by each party to go toward construction of the two new softball fields. County Judge Hudson also says the go-kart track at Ben Garin has been reopened with extended hours after the new owners of the enterprise recently secured insurance coverage. In addition, renovation work is being conducted at the county's three other parks in the Lavaca, Midland, and Witcherville areas.
Arkansas Democrats are in Charlotte, North Carolina this week for the Democratic National Convention. Former Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, speaking on MSNBC yesterday morning, weighed in on some of the issues the Democrats will try to address at the convention. Republicans pushed the accomplishments of women last week at their convention, but Lincoln says the Democratic Party is a stronger advocate of women's issues.
But I think women now are really realizing that if they're going to want a party that's going to represent them in terms of their reproductive rights and a whole host of other things, that the Democratic Party is the one that's going to be there for them.
Lincoln is a former senator from Arkansas. She is now a senior policy advisor at a Washington lobbying firm.
The Razorback volleyball team suffered its second loss of the season last night, losing in four sets to Oklahoma at Barnhill Arena on the U of A campus. The Razorbacks play again this weekend as the team hosts its second home tournament of the season. The tournament is a two-day affair that starts Friday night at Barnhill Arena. Also appearing in the tournament field will be the University of Texas at El Paso, the University of Louisiana Monroe, and Houston Baptist University. Arkansas opens with Houston Baptist Friday night at 7.
A heat advisory is in effect for much of the state, with dangerously hot temperatures expected to reach the triple digits. Marty Drexler with the National Weather Service says this has prompted a heat advisory to be put in effect through late today.
We do have an upper-level high-pressure ridge over the southern plains as summer tries to hang on for its last hurrah before we do get those fall temperatures. And we will see those this weekend, which will be very nice. We'll have a cold front come through Friday, and that will change the upper pattern to more of a trough, which will allow a frontal boundary to come through, give us some showers and thunderstorms Friday, and then clean out over the weekend, and temperatures highs over the weekend only in the lower 80s.
Rains from the remnants of Hurricane Isaac last week helped the drought conditions that have plagued the state this summer. At this point, only a dozen of the state's counties have burn bans in place, and more rain later this week should help even more.
And the National Weather Service in Tulsa has issued an excessive heat warning until 9 tonight for Sebastian County. Highs this afternoon reached in the 100s. Heat index values 106. Tonight, cloudy with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows in the lower to upper 70s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 20% chance of rain, possibly a thunderstorm. Highs tomorrow, mid-90s. And for tomorrow night, partly cloudy, slight chance of rain. Lows in the lower to upper 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. This morning, just after 11, the University of Arkansas announced a major gift that will benefit the arts on campus. Chancellor David Gerhardt told a large crowd assembled in the old fieldhouse that the Jim and Joyce Faulkner family was making a $6 million gift toward the renovation of the facility into a state-of-the-art performing arts center. Here are excerpts from Chancellor Gerhardt's announcement.
The University of Arkansas is committed to growing and supporting the arts on campus and in our community. And I want to thank particularly our architecture students who are behind me, and they're interested in the arts as well, because I suppose you could define architecture as an art, maybe, and as a science. I'll debate that with our dean later. But I want to thank them for letting us come into their building, which in about a year won't be their building anymore. So to our architecture students, y'all just carry on and listen if you like. We're going to talk about what's going to happen to this building when you vacate and move back to the Anderson Building in Volwalker Hall. Our recent designation as an all-Steinway school confirms our commitment to high instructional and performance standards. The Public Art Oversight Advisory Committee has begun to see the fruits of its work, beautifying our campus with a monument to Silas Hunt, dedicated just last week. Our music and drama departments, however, have been limited by inadequate and outdated performance spaces. In fact, I think it's fair to say that many high schools across the state have performance venues offering more capabilities and more capacity than our current two options, Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall and the University Theater. Quite simply, we cannot compete with other colleges and universities for top-flight students and faculty who want to perform in first-class facilities. So for this reason, it gives me tremendous pleasure to announce that Jim and Joyce Faulkner have made a gift, and I'd like to ask the two of them to stand as I describe what they're going to do. Jim and Joyce, would you all stand and let everybody see you? It gives me tremendous pleasure to announce that Jim and Joyce Faulkner have made a gift of $6 million for the renovation of this field house. Thank you. Well deserved. This generous gift will enable the university to convert the field house into a state-of-the-art performing arts center. And I want you all to know that we hired a group to come in and review this facility and tell us if it's possible to turn it into a state-of-the-art performing arts center. And the word came back from our advisors that once we do this, and once we spend the funds to convert it, it will be considered one of the finest such facilities anywhere, with the finest acoustics. This is a huge step forward for the University of Arkansas, which has desperately needed a true performing arts venue to showcase the talents and abilities of our students and faculty, and to grow the performing arts programs. We can't thank the Faulkners enough for their commitment to the arts, to our students, and to the university. The Faulkners have been longtime University of Arkansas supporters, particularly of the Razorback Band, in which Jim and Joyce played a pivotal role last year in acquiring new uniforms for the band. That would not have happened to members of the band that are here today without the Faulkners' support. They've given generously to so many things, including Chancellor's scholarships for students. Once again, the Faulkners are helping us rise to meet the aspirations of our students by investing in their university. They have given so generously to their institution over many, many years. They were integral volunteers in the campaign for the 21st century. They have been Chancellor Society members since the beginning, and founding members of the Towers of Old Main. In fact, it was Jim's idea to start the Towers of Old Main about the first week I arrived on campus almost 15 years ago. I went to visit Jim, and he told me about this idea he had, and we implemented it, and now we have well over 600 members of the Towers of Old Main, which is our highest giving level at the university. In 2004, Jim was recognized as Volunteer of the Year. Performing in an arts center like the one we envision will be a dream come true for thousands of future students. And I want to particularly thank again the students for being here today, because this is being done for you. In fact, they will join a long list of distinguished performers when some of you students perform in this venue in a couple of years. Would you believe that in the past we have had performers right here in this facility, yes, before many of you were born, that included Louis Armstrong, Chuck Berry? I hope these names are familiar to you students. Ray Charles, one of Jane's favorites, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and a band that I saw here, that was a joke, dear. A band that I saw here called the Kingsmen. Now, does anybody remember Louie Louie? Well, you have to be at least 50 years of age or older to remember that, but they played here as well. The Vienna Boys Choir played right here in this venue. If math and science are the means by which we enrich our economy through job creation and technological innovation, then the arts are the means by which we enrich our spirits. A healthy, vibrant community finds balance in both and values both. Beyond providing learning opportunities for students, public art and public performance have been cited in several studies as key factors in recruiting and retaining the professional workforce tied to the expansion of the knowledge-based economy. The arts, as we all know, add to our overall quality of life by contributing to cultural, intellectual, social, and economic development. We cannot have a great university without a great arts program. It is simply not possible. For this reason, we have also submitted a proposal to the Fayetteville Advertising and Promotion Commission requesting financial support for this building. Providing a larger, more technologically advanced venue for musical and theater performances will enable the university to increase its benefit to Fayetteville's economy by drawing visitors to our city and giving our guests additional reason to extend their stays right here in the Ozark Plateau. This in turn will generate additional revenues for our city through sales taxes, including the hotel, motel, and restaurant tax. It is, ladies and gentlemen, a win-win for both the city of Fayetteville and the University of Arkansas. As we have said many times, the University of Arkansas is committed to being a top 50 research university by 2021, if not earlier. We know a much greater commitment to the arts will be necessary to accomplish this. Today, we thank Jim and Joyce Faulkner for helping us take the next step. We thank them for their loyalty, their generosity, and their commitment to their University of Arkansas.
That was Chancellor David Gerhardt of the University of Arkansas and excerpts from a press conference from just after 11 o'clock this morning on the U of A campus. Chancellor Gerhardt announced a $6 million gift from the Jim and Joyce Faulkner family to convert the UA's old field house to a new performing arts center. The University of Arkansas Board of Trustees will formally vote on the procedure later this week. The center will be named after the Faulkners. Ground is expected to be broken in about 1 year.
The great teachers were all reformers. Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, they all demanded a break with belief before reaching a new level of comprehension. On the Next Snap Judgment, from PRX and NPR, Losing My Religion. Snap Judgment. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Snap Judgment, Saturday afternoons at 1 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This week, we begin a series of reports on those daily occurrences we might not think about until there's a disruption in service. You put out the trash in the morning, and it's taken away by the time you're back. When it comes to everyday things that it's easy to take for granted, turning on the tap for water can be near the top. Decades since the passage of the Safe Drinking Water Act, most Americans can reasonably assume the water from their sink is safe. In Fort Smith, there is a collection of laboratories dedicated to making sure that's the case.
We're in the hallway that divides the five laboratories that we have.
Lance McAvoy is the environmental manager at Fort Smith Utilities Environmental Quality Analytical Laboratory.
This laboratory is the metals laboratory. We have a microbiology laboratory, a wet chemistry laboratory, a special equipment laboratory, and a biology laboratory.
This hallway is clean and quiet. An occasional person in a white lab coat enters one of the five labs. Inside those labs are tests to make sure the water residents drink, cook with, or simply come into contact with is safe.
This is our microbiology laboratory. We're one of only a handful of laboratories certified by the health department to analyze drinking water samples for bacteria.
So if a boil order is enacted for a neighborhood in Fort Smith, the water from that neighborhood will be tested here. Since the utility's Environmental Quality Analytical Lab is state-of-the-art,
The scientists here often test water from other cities as well. Lance McAvoy says they've tested water from Fayetteville, Russellville, and as far south as Mena. Though they test the water, the lab cannot lift a boil order, nor can a city. Only the state health department has that authority, but it can be based on the findings from a lab like this one. These tests are a combination of hands-on work and cutting-edge technology. Lance McAvoy collects a few vials of contaminated water that he uses to explain a test for tap water quality.
It's a 100-mil sample every time. The sample is then brought to room temperature.
Powdered media is added to and dissolved in the water. The sample is incubated in a 35-degree water bath for 24 hours, and if the sample comes out clear,
then it's negative for total coliform growth and E. coli. If the sample comes out yellow, it's total coliform growth.
Then the lights go out, and he grabs a handheld fluorescent lamp.
Then we check it for fluorescence using a long wave UV, and you'll see that this one fluoresces, kind of a bluish color. Well, that means it's positive for E. coli.
It's more than black lights and water baths here, of course. Recent advances in technology have produced tabletop machines and computers that can sample water from the tap or out of a waterway for contaminants in very, very small amounts, parts per billion and smaller. In the metals lab, where water can be tested for such things as lead content, that technology is on display inside
an inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometer. We refer to it as an ICP mass spec because it's not as big a mouthful.
This unit takes a water sample and turns it into a fine mist in what's called the nebulizer.
Then that's going into an argon plasma, and that plasma is at 10,000 Kelvin. That's roughly the surface temperature of the sun. That breaks down all the organics that might be left and gets rid of the water. Then each individual ion, isotope, goes into the detector, and it's measuring the weight of each isotope. So for lead, there are three abundant isotopes, 206, 207, 208. Every time it hits, it notices something hitting at 206, it knows that that's lead, 207, 208. Then it can actually add those together and give you a total lead, or it can actually say, okay, I want to know uranium-238 over uranium-235. It can look at 238 and 235 and show you the ratio. This will measure down in part per trillion detection limit. We normally run it in a mode for part per billion.
20 years ago, Lance says, detecting metals at a part per billion was considered amazing. Now, it's the standard. He says the labs in Fort Smith can test 10 parts per trillion. The newer machinery can also test faster and overnight, allowing for more efficient and faster test results. If a problem is found in one of the random tests, the lab team then has to investigate. A bad sample means they'll have to consider sample collection errors or a problem in the process. They'll return to the same spot and get more samples.
We collect a sample from that location, and then we collect a sample what's called upstream and downstream, looking at the flow. So it may be one or two service connections over, no more than five, and say that the site itself is the only one that keeps coming back positive, then we know that there's something about that location, that house. They may have a cross connection or some type of backflow, which we really then start investigating because that could, again, get into the distribution system.
While the tests conducted here can be complaint-driven, that's hardly all that's happening inside the labs. It's a seven-day-a-week operation.
We like to say that from the time the rain hits the ground and runs into the stream, into the reservoirs, the treatment plant, the collection system, and out of your tap, back into the collection system, into the wastewater plant, and then actually into the river. We actually test the river as well to make sure that what we're discharging isn't affecting it. We're testing the whole way through.
The work inside the labs is only part of the story. Many of the people here, like Don Clover, wade into the water around the region to bring back samples for regular testing. Don also brings back insects for examination.
One thing about the insect larvae, they're always there all the time. You go out and if you get a water sample, it gives you an idea of the water quality at that moment. It's a picture of the water quality. Insects are there day in and day out. They don't go on vacation or anything. They're always there. So if you're able to go out and actually collect samples of these and bring them back and ID them, then they'll give you an idea just merely by the presence or the absence of different types. You will get a good idea really of basically of the water quality.
Sure, they're there all the time.
They're there all the time, yes.
The afternoon, Don and Lance were discussing their work. The remnants of Hurricane Isaac were approaching. The wind had picked up and a light sprinkle was falling. The forecast at the time warned of heavy local rainfall totals. Lance McAvoy, the environment manager at the labs, says the staff gears up a bit for such storms since flash flooding can mean broken lines or other troubles. In fact, storms hundreds of miles away can create extra work in Fort Smith. 7 years ago, when Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, the lab worked overtime.
We actually spent our Labor Day weekend testing samples from the U.S. Forest Service. They have these gigantic potable water tanks that they were taking down to the area to supply fresh water. Fort Smith was a staging area. They brought all these in from out west because they didn't have really a wildfire problem back then. But all of those had to be certified as clean. So at that time I was a lab manager and I spent probably 12, 18 hours a day, 3 days, testing that so that they could get water down, because clean drinking water is the difference between life and death.
The cost of an average gallon of water, according to the Fort Smith Utility Department, is less than a penny per gallon. You can learn more about the city's water and read water quality reports for the city for the past 12 years at fortsmithwater.org. Next week, we'll continue our series of behind-the-scenes infrastructure field trips just a bit west of the utility labs. We'll tour the Fort Smith Sanitary Landfill, where there are a few surprises.
We built a park here on the landfill. Now, this area is about 11 and a half acres. And when I came here 7 years ago, this was a mosquito-infested swamp-like area. Had standing water that was foul-smelling. It was a catch-all for all the debris that was blowing off the trucks as they entered and exited the landfill. And I thought we could do something to demonstrate the efficiency of a landfill. And I thought that the way this area looked, it didn't help us in that regard. So I approached my employees about possibly turning this area into a park-like area. And of course, the guys thought I was crazy.
A park, some hidden history, and a giant composting operation at the landfill. That's next Wednesday on Ozarks at Large. It's Wednesday, September 5th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
When are we going to do something live again? Well, I mean, this is live, but I mean, like, with an audience.
We don't have a date yet, but we'll let you know when
we do have plans. It
was so much fun.
It took
was.
A lot
we
out of
really
us.
Excited to have you there, but yes. Whenever we have the next one, we'll let you know. You're definitely in.
Yes.
It's different when there's beady little eyes looking at you.
There is.
Yeah.
It's different.
No, we had a very good time. We do have plans to do it again, but things have to happen between now and then.
Well, if you missed last week's live show as part of the Roots Festival, don't miss the next one, because seeing these guys live is just too much fun. But in the meantime, it's Festival on the Border time in Fort Smith.
Already?
Justin Moore, who happens to be from Arkansas, obviously is a country musician. He has songs like Beta Hook, Don't Even Want to Know. He performs a free show in Fort Smith tomorrow night as part of Festival on the Border. Doors open at 6, and Stoney LaRue will be the opening act.
Good double bill.
6:30, Moore at 7:45. And admission is free, courtesy of Cox Communications, but you have to go to your local Cox store, office, whatever you call it.
To get a ticket.
To get a ticket.
Okay.
The second day of the festival is September 7th at the same venue. The concert will feature a local band of Durham at 7 and Classic Rockers 38 Special at 9 o'clock.
Can't get away from them. They were in Hot Springs the same time we were there, yes.
Well, we've had this run of, you know, Boston and Def Leppard and now 38 Special. Tickets are $10 in advance or $15 at the door, and you can buy them at the UAFS box office.
All right.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, Major General Thomas Hindman continued his efforts to build a Confederate army to defend Arkansas, including commandeering troops from south of the state. Camden merchant John Brown observed the buildup, writing on September 4, 1862, We have considerable preparation here toward maintaining the army which is forming in the middle of the state for our defense. Constant streams of soldiers pass from Louisiana and Texas, particularly the latter. However, the continued concentration of troops came at a cost, Brown observed in his diary 2 weeks later, writing, "Many soldiers are coming through this country to Little Rock and Pine Bluff from Texas, generally cavalry, and are equal to the locusts in Egypt in eating out almost everything as they go, hence the cost of goods and forage." To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Crist.
The second weekend of the Theater Squared production of Noises Off begins tomorrow night at 7:30 at Nadine Baum Studios in downtown Fayetteville. Sunday afternoon, after the cast had just completed a matinee, several members of cast and crew sat down on the set with me to talk about the manic pace and intricate timing required for the play within a play. Many of those in the audience remained to participate. You'll hear the voices of Morgan Hicks, the director of the play, Josh Tillotson, the production head of the set construction, as well as cast members including Erica Wilhite, Ariane Ellison, Justin Cunningham, Chris Crawford, and Mark Landon Smith.
I think the biggest challenge of this show, like any other show, is just how many moving pieces there are, and there are a million moving pieces. So everything is reliant on everything else to work. And so, yeah, it's just constant movement and people and boxes and bags and sardines and doors and yeah.
You had how much time to rehearse this?
We do 3.5 weeks.
3.5 weeks. So when we were here 3.5 weeks ago, if we had been in here, what would it look like?
It would have been an empty space, an empty black box with no chairs and no set and no people. And 3.5 weeks ago, we sat around a table and we read it for the first time, all of us. So
this was actually being constructed as you went along.
It was. We got lucky this time. Josh had just sat down. He's our production head, technical director of our theater, and we were building in the shop all summer, and then they were moving in the weekend that we were getting ready to start rehearsals. So this show, we said we need the set on day one. We have to have all these doors. We need to know how far apart they are because it's going to affect the timing, and we need to have the pieces of furniture that we're going to use. We need to have everything. So they were generous enough to create a schedule that allowed us to do that. So on day two of rehearsal, I think we had all the walls up and doors up. And then from there, they continued to work the whole time we were rehearsing, painting and finishing everything. But they had the doors in place, and that was crucial. And they had it rotating on day one.
You had it rotating on day one?
Yes.
So what did you, when we saw it turn around in that second act, we saw some braces come off. Did you know when you were told that this was going to rotate how you were going to do it?
Not initially, no. We had to play with a number of ideas of exactly where things were going to be positioned, figuring out how we're going to get the second level. Really, the first part of it was to figure out how to get all the elements we need, because obviously there's a lot of doors, and you have to have the second story. So figuring out those elements were first. Then figuring out how to make it spin kind of came next.
Just kind of came?
Well, fortunately, I had worked on a show before that had a revolving set, and I was able to use basically the same concept for this set. Having the side walls was a little more challenging. Believe it or not, the main unit was the easier part because it's a big giant platform. But the side walls being freestanding made it a little bit more interesting.
How do you make sure there's a door handle that works sometimes but comes off at a crucial time?
It's a magician's trick. We don't.
You can't tell us.
Yeah, it's actually an old-fashioned doorknob like that you would have in an older house, where the doorknob actually screws onto a little post, and so we have someone sneak up there and unscrew it, so at the right time, so then it comes out.
Tim,
do something.
One thing I wanted to ask you and your castmates is, at one point in the play, you're acting. Mm-hmm. In the other part, you're acting poorly. You have to be a bad actor. How difficult is a job of acting poorly well?
Well, I get it easy because I'm not actually in the show Nothing On, but so I get to act extremely poorly because Tim has horrific stage fright when he's not prepared. But I think it's always an exciting challenge to do that, you know, because we're in school and we're in shows and we're taught, you know, everything has to go by the books and everything has to be so, you know, and so to play a characters that aren't, you know, that are living in dual realities like that is really fun.
There's a lot of timing, especially when we come back from intermission and there's the axe that has to go back and forth and the flowers that have to be thrown. I'll ask this to anyone who's here. What kind of, that's a whole nother level of stage direction, right?
Absolutely. The play has a lot of stage direction. There's Act Two basically has two columns where there are lines that are going on one side and then the stage direction on the other side. So he writes a lot of stuff in, but we spent a lot of time trying to figure out that timing because, you know, if something takes 5 seconds versus if it takes 20 seconds, it's a completely different animal. I've done farces and things that have relied on timing before indoors and all of those things, but I've never seen anything quite as complicated as this. This was incredibly complicated timing, and it has to be perfect every single time in order for the joke to land. Yeah.
3.5 weeks in, when did you feel confident that you had it?
I'm hoping next weekend.
This was technical tonight?
This was a technical, yeah.
When did you feel confident, Mark Landon Smith?
Well, it's getting easier. It's getting easier. And I've done this show before in a different role, but we've had, over the past several weeks, these cheat sheets backstage to tell us where to go and our scripts and everything. And now we are actually able to not have to refer to those. Like, it's becoming very, especially the second act, which when you get the script, is extremely intimidating because you have stage directions on one side, the show on the other side, then the show within the show, and it's all very layered. And it looks very impossible, but now it's almost becoming easier than the first and the third. So,
is this the most active role you've ever had? I mean, you're all over the place.
That's good. I think so. In terms of in terms of just running around, the first couple of days we were in rehearsal, I got to rehearsal one day and I was like, I'm sore. My legs are sore. I didn't do anything weird at the gym. And then I went up the stairs and I was like, I'm sore from acting. Like, my legs are tired. So it is, it's really physical. It's a lot of running around.
There are a lot of planned, scheduled pratfalls. Has there in the past 3.5 weeks been any unscheduled falls? Because there's a lot of danger in this show.
There's danger in walking through the world anyway, right? So yeah, there have been a couple of moments where we've looked for Band-Aids or whatever, but it's not, I don't think that it's been any more dangerous than any other play. We've been really careful and we've gone through our fight choreography slowly. We had a great fight choreographer in Chris Pruitt and everything was very planned to look chaotic but not feel chaotic for the actors. Their safety and their security was my primary concern. So I don't think that no great scandalous catastrophe has taken place.
When you start, it's a table read, correct? Mm-hmm. So this, is it hard to get the concept at the table read before you're actually, because there's so much activity and so much physical finesse required. Can you imagine at the table read what it's going to be like when you're acting with your 8 other castmates?
I found it really easy to be able to tell how it was going to be because it's so well written, and all the stage direction inside the script is so well written too, that it kind of, it's all laid out for you, and all you have to do is just follow it. So I found it really easy to translate it into physical movement.
I agree, but for this, there's a lot of things, a lot of surprises that come about, you know, when you actually see where you're going to be falling and what you're going to be running into in the space itself. And the space is like its own character in the play. It's such a part of all of our actions that when you do get in here, it's like discovering the whole play all over again. Especially for this one, it was very different than I guess. I mean, it's exactly what you imagine, but then it feels very different when you're actually doing it.
Have you ever written a stage before?
No, that was exciting. No, you know, I mean, in transitions and things, I've ridden turntables around, but I've never gotten the chance to. And Morgan actually had the idea when I first got here, because I actually joined these guys a week and a half ago. Yeah, I know, isn't that crazy? And she had the idea for that Act 3 curtain speech, that I would start it backstage on the God mic, and that it would kind of transfer itself and be something that was happening to a live audience. And I fell in love with that idea immediately, because I got to play around with the timing of this thing moving, and sometimes it goes faster than others, and it's just it's a lot of fun.
Have other productions done that, where it moves right in the middle?
I think so. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think that the play could be done with two intermissions, and originally we thought that that's what it was going to be, because we didn't realize how quickly this unit was going to move. So when I realized we could literally move it, one person can move the centerpiece, and it can be done in 3 minutes, then I was like, oh, we're not taking an intermission for 3 minutes, because the last act is so short. So we just tried to find a way to make it interesting enough to watch and still feel like it's part of the play, as opposed to a break from the play. We didn't want that to be a dead moment where we were resetting. We wanted to keep us in the world. So
I know you guys have another performance tonight, but are there any questions from the audience?
Your question. I'm just wondering, because you incorporate mistakes into the play, if you actually make mistakes, does that make it easier, or maybe you don't make mistakes? A play within a play makes mistakes.
Yeah, you could. To us in the audience, you could drop a line in that third part, and we would never know that you've dropped a line, right? I mean, because it's chaos to begin with.
That would be terrifying for us. whenever, because we all have, I think we all in this brief little weekend of performances have just kind of had a mind freak and just, you know, slip a little bit on something. And it's really like, because it is so precisely choreographed, that we're just like, oh no, oh no. And there was one performance where we got a little ahead of ourselves, like on stage, and then backstage we were like having to make up for it. But I mean, we've started to all think like one being. And so whenever something like that happens, we just step in and like close the gap. Yeah.
It's like a domino effect. If you shift something, like, there have maybe, I'm not saying this happened, but maybe there was a time that I made a mistake. And you just don't know, if you take 3 more seconds doing something that you're doing wrong, you don't know how that's going to affect the entire house. Like, it's just, so it's one thing when you're in a play and you screw up and you're like, oh, I screwed that up. Here it's like, what have I done? Who did I hurt? Like, you really start to panic a little bit.
You don't know how many other people are like, listening and backpedaling and being like, how do I fix that? How do I fix that? Now I can't do my part for this entrance and whatever it is.
The theatrical butterfly effect, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The voices of cast and crew from Theater Squared's production of Noises Off. Our conversation was recorded this past Sunday after a matinee performance. The next weekend starts tomorrow night at 7:30. If you'd like more information about Theater Squared, you can go to theater2.org.
This is Ozarks at Large.
Creativity involves taking something ordinary and making it something unique simply by having a different perspective. A little over 2 decades ago, the creators of Stomp began showing audiences how everyday objects like trash cans and pots and pans can be used as musical instruments. Since that time, the show has traveled around the world, produced an Emmy-nominated television special, and most recently performed at the 2012 Summer Olympics closing ceremonies in London. This weekend, Northwest Arkansas audiences will be able to see the 8-member troupe on stage at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Andre Fernandez, rehearsal director for the percussion group, says trash cans in the Stomp show typically last for about a week.
Because of constantly banging on them, the tone changes, so you don't get that nice crisp sound like a new trash can. But our crew guys, they try to bang it out to make it look round, but, you know, when the sound, you know, the tone, I guess you could say, starts fading and starts getting dull, then we'll ask the crew to change it. Or sometimes, usually the crew just changes on themselves, like, oh, this sounds like crap. So, but it's a trash can, so how's it going to sound like crap? But then, you know, it does.
Fernandez explains that most of the percussion items, like bins, brooms, poles, and matchboxes, are ordered online instead of bought at a local store. He does say, though, sometimes if there is a press event prior to the set arriving in town, the crew will run to a hardware store like Home Depot or Lowe's to pick up some supplies. Fernandez, who can play the trombone and drums, says he remembers thinking Stomp was so amazing when he first saw a show with his family in 1996.
I saw the show, and after the show, my brother was like, "Oh, you can do that, you can do that." I was like, "No way, how do you teach someone to do that?" It was just crazy, amazing. And then a year later, I mean, not even a year later, March of 97, I'm auditioning for the show. My brother calls me up and "Come up to audition for shows." I'm like, "Okay, sure. What have I got to lose, you know?" And Stomp was the one that gave me a chance, and I got hired. And 15 years later, going on my 16th year, I'm still here having fun, performing, getting to travel the world, travel the U.S.
Having been with the group for some time now, Fernandez has changed the way he looks at everyday objects.
We like to improv with this show, as you know, and like bringing things from outside, like a sign that's on the floor or just whatever kind of prop we can use. We can, you know, we'll bring it onto the stage. We think we can use it and bring it to the stage and incorporate it into the show. So that's why it's so fun and Stomp's so fresh, you know, all the time. It's never the same show. You know, every day, you know, we got different cast members come in, the show changes. And, you know, we like to, some people are really creative and they find whatever they can on the street and they bring it into the show and incorporate that into the show.
Fernandez says that the beauty of live theater in Stomp is that the artists have room to bring in something new and experiment with it. He says the show creators love that and are open to that freedom of expression. He says that creativity and ingenuity are why Stomp still continues to appeal to audiences around the world.
It's something that can't be duplicated. People try to duplicate Stomp, but it's infectious. You know, Stomp is infectious because music is all around us. You know, we find music in everything. We walk in rhythm, we talk in rhythm, you know, our hearts beat in rhythm. And it's just finding music. It's basically telling everybody that music is everywhere, it's universal, and we can find music in everything we do.
Stomp will perform at Walton Arts Center four times this weekend, beginning with an 8 o'clock show Friday night. More information available at waltonartcenter.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, September the 5th, 2012. The birthday of Ward Just, born Michigan City, Indiana, 1935, author of more than a dozen books of fiction, including The Congressman Who Loved Flaubert, The American Blues, The American Ambassador, Jack Gance, and others. Started out as a journalist, came from a family of journalists. The family published the town newspaper, went off to college, dropped out of college, came home to be a full-time journalist. By the time he was in his mid-20s, he was writing for Newsweek and then the Washington Post, went to Saigon, covered the Vietnam War, was seriously wounded by shrapnel from a grenade, came back to the States to recover, wrote a book about Vietnam, and then he quit journalism and launched into fiction. His book, Exiles in the Garden, begins, "Especially when he was alone, Alec Malone had the habit of slipping into reverie, a semi-conscious state not to be confused with dreams. His reveries presented a kind of abstract grandeur, expressionist canvases in close focus, untitled. The reveries had been with him since childhood, and he treated them like old friends paying a visit." It's the birthday of the journalist Jonathan Kozol, born in Boston, 1936, taught in a public school in Boston, has written many books about public education in this country and about how segregated our schools still are. Books include Savage Inequalities, Children in America's Schools, and Amazing Grace, The Lives of Children and the Conscience of a Nation, about kids in the Mott Haven neighborhood in the South Bronx. Jonathan Kozol, who said, "Pick battles big enough to matter, small enough to win." And it was on this day, 1957, that Jack Kerouac's book On the Road was published, based on the trip he took across the country 10 years before, starting out in New York, rode a trolley to the edge of Yonkers, wanted to hitchhike, got to Route 6 at the Connecticut border. There was a big rainstorm. No cars picked him up. He gave up, went back to New York, bought a bus ticket to Chicago, and there he started hitchhiking. Stayed in YMCAs and cheap hotels, crossed the Mississippi. In Omaha, he saw his first real cowboy, rode on the back of a flatbed truck with a group of hobos. He knew he wanted to write about it, and finally, in April of 1951, Kerouac sat down at his kitchen table, wound a continuous roll of paper into a typewriter, tuned his radio to an all-night jazz station, and in 20 days he had the first draft of his new novel. He told the basically true story of his adventures with Neil Cassady, his friend, changed Cassady's name to Dean Moriarty, his own name to Sal Paradise, and it came out on this day in 1957. Here's a poem for today by Lucy Shaw, entitled Wrong Turn. I took a wrong turn the other day, a mistake, but it led me to the shop where I found the very thing I'd been searching for. With my brother, I opened a packet of old letters from my mother and saw a side of her that sweetened what had been deeply sour. Later that day, the radio sang a song from a time when I was discovering love and folded me into itself again. Wrong Turn, a poem by Lucy Shaw from her collection What the Light Was Like, published by Word Farm and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Annual Brits in the Ozarks All-British Car and Cycle Show, benefiting the ALS Association of Northwest Arkansas, fighting Lou Gehrig's disease, will be held on Saturday, September 8th. This event is from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the University of Arkansas Agri Park in Fayetteville. Registration and more information are available at britishironnwa.org. Also this weekend, Polo in the Ozarks on Saturday.
And that's right. Polo in the Ozarks, a great tradition that benefits lifestyles, and we have some tickets to give away. One pair of tickets that includes the gala and the match, and another pair of tickets that just includes the match. We're going to do it with a trivia question, but we're doing something different.
Yes.
Instead of calling in, we're going to give you 24 hours to email us.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask a question. If you want to guess the answer, send an email to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the question for those of us going through a bit of withdrawal for the Summer Olympics. What are the only three current Summer Olympic events that no American has ever won a medal participating in?
All right. And the first person to get us all three of those correctly will get the package that includes the gala tickets and the match tickets.
Right. And everyone else who gets at least one of the sports right will go into the ceramic cow to win just the match tickets.
And we'll draw a winner for that one. And we'll let you guys know tomorrow.
Right. And I tell you what, around this afternoon, I'm going to put up on our Facebook page, the Ozarks at Large Facebook page, one of the sports.
Okay.
So all you have to do now to get entered into for the match tickets is just go to our Facebook page in a little bit.
There you go. Easy enough.
Three current events that no American has ever medaled in, current events in the Summer Olympics.
Easy enough.
ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Okay?
Okay.
Very good. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Oark.
There you go.
Deep in the woods.
Deep in the woods.
One of my favorite places in the world. Let's see. Christina Thomas will have more on today's announcement from the university on tomorrow's show.
She will.
She'll co-host with me.
She will.
You and I will be back on Friday.
We will be back on Friday.
With another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yep. Thanks so much for listening.
And let me tell you one more time. Ozarksatlarge@gmail.com with your answer for the tickets.
Good luck.